Chapter 5. Elliot slept sweetly on, although he had troubles in droves. It was the toilet in the foul little office lavatory that seemed to be having all the bad dreams. It sighed, it sobbed, it gurgled that it was drowning. Canned goods and tax forms and National Geographics were piled on the toilet tank. A bowl and a spoon were soaking in cold water in the wash basin. The medicine cabinet over the basin was wide open. It was crammed with vitamins and headache remedies and hemorrhoid salves and laxatives and sedatives. Elliot used them all regularly, but they weren't for him alone. They were for all the vaguely ill people who came to see him. Love and understanding and a little money were not enough for those people. They wanted medicine besides. Papers were stacked everywhere. Tax forms, Veterans Administration forms, pension forms, relief forms, Social Security forms, parole forms. Stacks had toppled here and there, forming dunes. And between the stacks and dunes lay paper cups and empty cans of ambrosia and cigarette butts and empty bottles of Southern Comfort. Thumbtacked to the walls were pictures Elliot had clipped from Life and Look, pictures that now rustled in a light, cool breeze running before a thunderstorm. Elliot found that certain pictures cheered people up, particularly pictures of baby animals. His visitors also enjoyed pictures of spectacular accidents. Astronauts bored them. They liked pictures of Elizabeth Taylor because they hated her so much, felt very superior to her. Their favorite person was Abraham Lincoln. Elliot tried to popularize Thomas Jefferson and Socrates, too, but people couldn't remember from one visit to the next who they were.
"Which one is which?" they'd say.
The office had once belonged to a dentist. There was no clue of this previous occupancy save for the staircase leading up from the street. The dentist had nailed tin signs to the risers, each sign praising some aspect of his services. The signs were still there, but Elliot had painted out the messages. He had written a new one, a poem by William Blake. This was it, as broken up so as to fit 12 risers. The angel that presided, or my birth said, little creature, formed of joy and mirth, go love without the help of anything on earth. At the foot of the stairs, written in pencil on the wall by the senator himself, was the senator's rebuttal, another poem by Blake. Love seeketh only self to please, to bind another to its delight, joys in another's loss of ease, and builds a hell in heaven's despite. Back in Washington, Elliot's father was wishing out loud that he and Elliot were both dead.
I have a rather primitive idea, said McAllister.
The last primitive idea you had cost me control of $87 million.
McAllister indicated with a tired smile that he wasn't about to apologize for the design of the foundation. It had, after all, done exactly what it was meant to do, had handed the fortune from father to son without the tax collectors getting a dime. McAllister could scarcely have guaranteed that the son would be conventional.
I should like to propose that Elliot and Sylvia make one last try for a reconciliation.
Sylvia shook her head.
No, she whispered. I'm sorry. No.
She was curled in a great wing chair. She had taken off her shoes. Her face was a flawless blue-white oval, her hair raven black. There were circles under her eyes.
No.
This was, of course, a medical decision, and a wise one, too. Her second breakdown and recovery had not turned her back into the old Sylvia of the early Rosewater County days. It had given her a distinctly new personality, the third since her marriage to Elliot. The core of this third personality was a feeling of worthlessness, of shame at being revolted by the poor and by Elliot's personal hygiene, and a suicidal wish to ignore her revulsions, to get back to Rosewater, to very soon die in a good cause. So it was with self-conscious, medically prescribed, superficial opposition to total sacrifice that she said again,
No.
The senator swept Elliot's picture from the mantelpiece.
Who can blame her?
One more roll in the hay with that drunk gypsy I call son? He apologized for the coarseness of this last image. Old men without hope have a tendency to be both crude and accurate. I beg your pardon. Sylvia put her lovely head down, raised it again.
I don't think of him as that, as a drunk gypsy.
I do, by God. Every time I'm forced to look at him, I think to myself, what a staging area for a typhoid epidemic. Don't try to spare my feelings, Sylvia. My son doesn't deserve a decent woman. He deserves what he's got. The sniveling camaraderie of whores, malingerers, pimps, and thieves.
They're not that bad, Father Rosewater.
As I understand it, that's their chief appeal to Elliot, that there's absolutely nothing good about them.
Sylvia, with two nervous breakdowns behind her and with no well-formed dreams before her, said quietly, just as her doctor would have wanted her to,
I don't want to argue.
You still could argue on Elliot's behalf?
Yes. If I don't make anything else clear tonight, at least let me make that clear. Elliot is right to do what he's doing. It's beautiful what he's doing. I'm simply not strong enough or good enough to be by his side anymore. The fault is mine.
Pained mystification and then helplessness suffused the senator's face.
Tell me one good thing about those people Elliot helps.
I can't.
I thought not.
It's a secret thing,
she said, forced to argue, pleading for the argument to stop right there. Without any notion of how merciless he was being, the senator pressed on.
You're among friends now. Suppose you tell us what this great secret is.
The secret is that they're human,
said Sylvia. She looked from face to face for some flicker of understanding. There was none. The last face into which she peered was Norman Mushari's. Mushari gave her a hideously inappropriate smile of greed and fornication. Sylvia excused herself abruptly, went into the bathroom, and wept. Thunder was heard in Rosewater now, caused a brindle dog to come scrambling out of the firehouse with psychosomatic rabies. The dog stopped in the middle of the street, shivering. The streetlights were faint and far apart. The only other illumination came from a blue bulb in front of the police station in the courthouse basement, a red bulb in front of the firehouse, and a white bulb in the telephone booth across the street from the Saw City Candy Kitchen, which was the bus depot, too. There was a crash. Lightning turned everything to blue-white diamonds. The dog ran to the door of the Rosewater Foundation, scratched and howled. Upstairs, Elliot slept on. His sickly, translucent, drip-dry shirt, which hung from a ceiling fixture, swayed like a ghost. Elliot had only one shirt. He had only one suit, a frowsy, blue, double-breasted chalk stripe now hanging on the knob of the lavatory door. It was a wonderfully made suit, for it still held together, though it was very old. Elliot had gotten it in trade from a volunteer fireman in New Egypt, New Jersey, way back in 1952. Elliot had only one pair of shoes, black ones. They had a crackle finish as a result of an experiment. Elliot once tried to polish them with Johnson's Glow Coat, which was a floor wax, not intended for shoes. One shoe was on his desk. The other was in the lavatory on the rim of the wash basin. A maroon nylon sock, with garter attached, was in each shoe. One end of the garter of the sock in the shoe on the wash basin was in the water. It had saturated itself and its sock, too, through the magic of capillary action. The only colorful new articles in the office, other than the magazine pictures, were a family-size box of Tide, the wash day miracle, and the yellow slicker and red helmet of a volunteer fireman, which hung on pegs by the office door. Elliot was a fire lieutenant. He could easily have been captain or chief, since he was a devoted and skillful fireman, and had given the fire department 6 new engines besides. It was at his own insistence that he held a rank no higher than lieutenant. Elliot, because he almost never left his office except to fight fires, was the man to whom all fire calls were sent. That was why he had 2 telephones by his cot. The black one was for foundation calls. The red one was for fire calls. When a fire call came in, Elliot would push a red button mounted on the wall under his commission as a notary public. The button activated a doomsday bullhorn under the cupola on top of the firehouse. Elliot had paid for the horn, and the cupola, too. There was an ear-splitting thunderclap.
Now,
said Elliot in his sleep. His black telephone was about to ring. Elliot would awake and answer it by the third ring. He would say what he said to every caller, no matter what the hour. This is the Rosewater Foundation. How can we help you? It was the senator's conceit that Elliot trafficked with criminals. He was mistaken. Most of Elliot's clients weren't brave enough or clever enough for lives of crime. But Elliot, particularly when he argued with his father or his bankers or his lawyers, was almost equally mistaken about who his clients were. He would argue that the people he was trying to help were the same sorts of people who, in generations past, had cleared the forests, drained the swamps, built the bridges, people whose sons formed the backbone of the infantry in time of war, and so on. The people who leaned on Elliot regularly were a lot weaker than that, and dumber, too. When it came time for their sons to go into the armed forces, for instance, the sons were generally rejected as being mentally, morally, and physically undesirable. There was a tough element among the Rosewater County poor who, as a matter of pride, stayed away from Elliot and his uncritical love, who had the guts to get out of Rosewater County and look for work in Indianapolis or Chicago or Detroit. Very few of them found steady work in those places, of course, but at least they tried. The client who was about to make Elliot's black telephone ring was a 68-year-old virgin who, by almost anybody's standards, was too dumb to live. Her name was Diana Moon Glampers. No one had ever loved her. There was no reason why anyone should. She was ugly, stupid, and boring. On the rare occasions when she had to introduce herself, she always said her full name and followed that with the mystifying equation that had thrust her into life so pointlessly.
My mother was a Moon. My father was a Glampers.
This cross between a Glampers and a Moon was a domestic servant in the tapestry brick Rosewater Mansion, the legal residence of the senator, a house he actually occupied no more than 10 days out of any year. During the remaining 355 days of each year, Diana had the 26 rooms all to herself. She cleaned and cleaned and cleaned alone, without even the luxury of having someone to blame for making dirt. When Diana was through for the day, she would retire to a room over the Rosewater's 6-car garage. The only vehicles in the garage were a 1936 Ford Phaeton, which was up on blocks, and a red tricycle with a fire bell hanging from the handlebars. The tricycle had belonged to Elliot as a child. After work, Diana would sit in her room and listen to her cracked green plastic radio, or she would fumble with her Bible. She could not read. Her Bible was a frazzled wreck. On the table beside her bed was a white telephone, a so-called princess telephone, which she rented from the Indiana Bell Telephone Company for 75 cents a month, over and above ordinary service charges. There was a thunderclap. Diana yelled for help. She should have yelled. Lightning had killed her mother and father at a Rosewater Lumber Company picnic in 1916. She was sure lightning was going to kill her, too. And because her kidneys hurt all the time, she was sure the lightning would hit her in the kidneys. She snatched her princess phone from its cradle. She dialed the only number she ever dialed. She whimpered and moaned, waiting for the person at the other end to answer. It was Elliot. His voice was sweet, vastly paternal, as humane as the lowest note of a cello. "This is the Rosewater Foundation," he said. "How can we help you?"
"The electricity is after me again, Mr. Rosewater. I had to call. I'm so scared."
"Call me any time you want, dear. That's what I'm here for."
"The electricity is really going to get me this time."
"Oh, darn that electricity." Elliot's anger was sincere. "That electricity makes me so mad the way it torments you all the time. It isn't fair."
"I wish it would come ahead and kill me instead of just talk about it all the time."
"This would be a mighty sad town, dear, if that ever happened."
"Who'd care?"
"I'd care."
"You care about everybody. I mean, who else?"
Many, many, many people, dear.
Dumb old woman, 68 years old.
68 is a wonderful age.
68 years is a long time for a body to live without having one nice thing ever happen to the body. Nothing nice ever happened to me. How could it?
I was behind the door when the good Lord passed out the brains. That is not true.
I was behind the door when the good Lord passed out the strong, beautiful bodies. Even when I was young, I couldn't run fast, couldn't jump. I have never felt real good, not once. I have had gas and swole ankles and kidney pain since I was a baby. And I was behind the door when the good Lord passed out the money and the good luck, too. And when I got nerve enough to come out from behind the door and whisper, Lord, Lord, dear, sweet Lord, here's little old me, wasn't one nice thing left. He had to give me an old potato for a nose. He had to give me hair like steel wool, and he had to give me a voice like a bullfrog.
It isn't a bullfrog voice at all, Diana. It's a lovely voice.
Bullfrog voice,
she insisted.
There was this bullfrog up there in heaven, Mr. Rosewater. The good Lord was going to send it down to this sad world to be born, but that old bullfrog was smart. Sweet Lord, that smart old bullfrog said, if it's all the same to you, sweet Lord, I'd just as soon not be born. It doesn't look like much fun for a frog down there. So the Lord let that bullfrog hop around in heaven up there, where nobody'd use it for bait or eat its legs, and the Lord gave me that bullfrog's voice.
There was another thunderclap. It raised Diana's voice an octave.
I should have said what that bullfrog said. This ain't such a hot world for Diana Moon Clampers's neither.
Now, now, Diana, now, now,
said Elliot. He took a small drink from a bottle of Southern Comfort.
My kidneys hurt me all day, Mr. Rosewater. They feel like a red-hot cannonball full of electricity was going through them real slow and just turning round and round with poisoned razor blades sticking out of it.
That can't be very pleasant.
It ain't.
I do wish you'd go see a doctor about those darn kidneys, dear.
I did. I went to Dr. Winters today, just like you told me. He treated me like I was a cow, and he was a drunk veterinarian. And when he was through punching me and rolling me all around, why, he just laughed. He said he wished everybody in Rosewater County had kidneys as wonderful as mine. He said my kidney trouble was all in my head. Oh, Mr. Rosewater, from now on, you're the only doctor for me.
I'm not a doctor, dear.
I don't care. You've cured more hopeless diseases than all the doctors in Indiana put together.
Now, now.
Don Leonard had boils for 10 years, and you cured him. Ned Calvin had that twitch in his eye since he was a little boy, and you made it stop. Pearl Fleming came and saw you, and she threw her crutch away. And now my kidneys have stopped hurting, just hearing your sweet voice.
I'm glad.
And the thunder and lightning stopped.
It was true. There was only the hopelessly sentimental music of rainfall now.
So you can sleep now, dear?
Thanks to you. Oh, Mr. Rosewater, there should be a big statue of you in the middle of this town, made out of diamonds and gold and precious rubies beyond price and pure uranium. You, with your great name and your fine education and your money and the nice manners your mother taught you, you could have been off in some big city, riding around in Cadillacs with the highest muckety-mucks while the bands played and the crowds cheered. You could have been so high and mighty in this world that when you look down on the plain, dumb, ordinary people of poor old Rosewater County, we would look like bugs.
Now, now.
You gave up everything a man is supposed to want, just to help the little people, and the little people know it. God bless you, Mr. Rosewater. Good night.